I'll listen to Big Fish every day for the rest of my life if I have to. And I might have to.
In what situation would you have to?
Gun to my head.
Anyway.
Welcome to episode 10 of Burritos and Other Less Important Things. We did it. We're in 2019. We've been doing this for almost a year, and we got 10 episodes in. How do you feel about that, Zach?
I'm so proud of us. No one has ever podcasted like we have with such determination at the beginning, and then about 4 months of not caring whatsoever.
There's a little backstory to it. We were both home for Thanksgiving. We planned on recording a podcast together in person over Thanksgiving. That one just didn't happen because of laziness. We were just having too much fun doing other stuff. And when we're both in our homes and during our work schedule, we don't have other fun stuff to do. So like, this is what we do.
Yeah. We haven't had a special guest planned and everything, and they were gung ho. And then we actually started hanging out. We're like, nah, let's do anything but record a podcast right about now.
Luckily, that is kind of evergreen content, and we can do that one pretty much anytime.
That is true.
This one, on the other hand, which we tried to record over Christmas break, is more time sensitive. This is the first of our Best of 2018 series. We're going to talk about music. The reason why we didn't do this over Christmas break is because I literally got sick while I was in Zach's house. I started feeling ill, and I, as you can hear in my voice, I still haven't fully recovered. You're going to hear me cough and clear my throat a couple of times. Bear with me. 2018. How do we feel about 2018 in general, music wise?
I thought that there are a lot of very goods and not that many excellence, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I found my top albums this year are ones that I revisit a lot, but not... I don't revisit the deeper albums, if that makes any sense to you.
Yeah, I mean, so this year was like the 10th year anniversary of our freshman year of college, which is terrifying to say. But there are a lot of like 10-year retrospectives about albums like Meriwether Post Pavilion by Animal Collective and Wolfgang Amadeus Phoenix. You know, these kind of seminal indie rock albums that came out and ones that I still listen to with some repetition now. And I just don't think anything of that level came out this year, but there were a lot of very, very good albums.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at on this. I don't think it was a bad year for music. I think anyone could find a bunch of albums to listen to regularly into the future, but it's not as many as maybe a big year in music would give you.
I definitely agree. It's tough to rate a year of music in the year of music.
Yeah,
for sure. I've heard proposals sent around, especially for things like the Oscars, where you award the Oscar for Best Picture 5 years after the fact, and just see what has staying power. Because I'm sure there are albums this year that I absolutely love that I'm probably not going to revisit all that much, even though they may be in my top 10 or honorable mentions. Sorry, yeah, top 11. Let's keep it on.
Yeah, the unbranded top 11. We're going to do our top 11 songs with honorable mentions, of course, because neither of us are very good at limiting ourselves to a number. And then we're going to do our top 11 albums with a few honorable mentions as well.
Yeah, I mean, I made a playlist of my favorite 100 songs this year.
I made a playlist of my favorite 33. So that's basically, you can tell the difference between how Zach and I listen to music from that.
Yeah, it's too much. It's far too much. And then I realized when I get to 100, there are songs I definitely like, but it's just, it's nothing that I'll revisit to as frequently as ones in my top 50.
Yeah, I'm finding my 33 is, I could cycle songs in for the ones that I don't listen to as much, but I think like a top 25 would probably encapsulate the songs that I want to revisit the most.
Yeah, I put mine on shuffle a couple times, and there weren't any ones I outright skipped, but there are ones that when they came up, I was like, oh, this song, and we're super happy about listening to over and over and over again. But, you know, it's still good music.
Yeah, so we'll, you've already put out that playlist. I'll attach mine. We'll put them out in concert together with this episode and make sure people can listen to those.
You're not going to link to my sweet, sweet WordPress?
No. all right. So with that said, you want to kick it off with your honorable mention songs?
Sure. So because we're doing our top 11, I just kind of pulled my top 20 songs, and I'm going to give a couple quick recognition to some songs that didn't quite make the 11. So two artists that have worked together in the past, Courtney Barnett and Kurt Vile, both put out songs that were songs and albums that I genuinely enjoyed. Both were kind of not their lead singles, but their second singles off the album. City Looks Pretty by Courtney Barnett. Friends treat you like a stranger. By Kurt Vile. Got to the bay, but by then I was far away. I was on the ground, but looking straight into the sun. But the sun went down and I couldn't find another one for a while. For because it was an all burning feeling. We're both, you know, not a B-side, but their second kind of change of pace songs. City Looks Pretty has this really nice breakdown to a slower song by the end, and Bass Ackwards is kind of meandering, slow, very Kurt Vile-y song.
It's very Kurt Vile.
I saw him play it, and it's, you know, it's perfectly encapsulates the kind of person that he is. He wooed a lot at the concert, and spoke in what I think Nick Audette described as a robot snake tone at some point, which I'm classic, still not sure what that is, but it did make sense at the time. He also sounds exactly like his albums live.
Yeah, Kapil and I saw him at Outside Lands. I believe it was the year after he came out with Waking on a Pretty Days, so he was playing a lot of songs from that.
To go down the list a little bit more, I really liked Geyser, the opening track off Mitski's album. Only about 2 minutes. It has this weird little glitch right in the beginning that I, you know, thought was a legitimate error in my MP3, but kind of grew to love it. And she has these, very good at writing these 2.5 minute powerful, emotive songs. And Geyser is one of her best for that. Make Me Feel by Janelle Monáe is funky as all hell. That's just the way you make me feel. That's just the way. That's just the way you make me feel. That's just the way you make me feel. So good, so good, so fucking real. That's just the way you make me feel. Very princey in tone. You know, hearing that live or hearing that blasting loud just makes you want to dance, and it's one hell of a track. Time by Eamon Dunes is kind of quite the opposite. It's a slower, groovier song by someone who I just discovered this year. Speed, southern lane. Another honorable mention is Love It If We Made It by the 1975. I've listened to their stuff in the past, just one or two songs, and I never enjoyed it at all. I think you're kind of in the same boat.
For sure.
But on this album and this song specifically, I feel like they kind of realized that they needed to write actual songs. The chorus funk breakdown is amazing on this song. It kind of has the, I think it was quoted as somewhere, I forget where, but the millennial, we didn't start the fire. for the verses, which once you've listened to it really does make sense. But they somehow pull it off. You're going to be talking about one of his other songs later, but I loved basically every song off Pusha T's new album. Santeria was the one I picked out, but I really could have gone with any of them. They say the death comes in threes, how appropriate. Triple Breck, the Russian like Soviets. Soviet. At the Kremlin, searching for the green like a gremlin. Presidential emblem, presidential tint on the shit that I am driven in. Woo! I just place orders and drop dollars. Rottweilers roam the grounds, the Glock hollers.
Yeah, I think earlier in the year you might have had a different one, but
yeah,
this is what you ended up with.
Yeah, it honestly could be any of the seven tracks, and that's what makes that album so good. And then
got a feeling we're going to talk about that album a little bit.
Oh yeah, for quite a while. Out of all the Wyoming projects, that's the only one I'll put on with any sort of repetition. And then the one that's probably been growing on me the most, and probably should be in the top 10, is Failsafe by William Tyler. I have really loved his music since I heard, I think, it wasn't Modern Country. I'm blanking on the name of the album.
It was the, I remember exactly what one you're talking about, but also don't remember the name.
Impossible Truth. Oh, sorry.
There we go.
Yeah, Impossible Truth. If you don't know who William Tyler is, he is a finger pick, mostly acoustic, sometimes electric guitarist. That's all instrumental. Usually it's just him and his guitar. On this new album, they've added a little bit more instrumentation, but it's still guitar driven melody. And this song is just like the most bright, uplifting, sunny, enjoyable acoustic song I've heard in a very, very long time. I made this list.
I would characterize it as a road trip song.
Yes, absolutely. Not to sound pretentious, but I definitely will. This song just came out before I did my Europe trip, and I think I probably listened to it about 20 times just walking around Europe, listening to it and enjoying the sights. So
that won't be the most pretentious thing you say in this podcast.
I'm just going to try and top it over and over. but that's one that has really risen up my rankings. And that album comes out next week, and it's already one of my most anticipated albums of the year. So those are a couple songs that I've really been enjoying, especially Failsafe.
Okay. My honorable mention, it's not exactly like songs that just missed the top 11. It's some of those and then other songs that I felt like needed to be mentioned. One of them, Handhold Hero by Lump, the Laura Marling and Mike Lindsay project.
Hey man, I know you. How's your brother? How's your blues? How's your shallow walking shoes? Do they hurt you just the same? Hey there, Sister Lou. How you doing? What you do? If I the words a gambler too, well, the boards are good for playing.
It's such a weird departure from what Laura Marling usually does, or at least this whole album was, but this song itself kind of harkens back to the folkiness that we are used to from her, and for sure lyrically one of the best songs on that little album. It was only six songs with a really strange credits track at the end, but
I don't know how I feel about the credits track.
I'm not a big fan. Makes me feel like I'm getting a seven-track album, but it's only six, and that was kind of disappointing.
I mean, they're just taking after the Marvel Universe and doing those after-credit scenes.
Yeah. Next honorable mention, Feed the Fire by Dawes. This is my nomination for best song off of a completely garbage album. I feel really annoyed that I had to listen to it, but this song is really good. Like the guitar hook got me immediately.
I used to dream I was a poster in a bedroom. All the pictures that get cut out of the fancy magazines. Some told your genius meant to leave the planet too soon.
It's the best Police song that came out this year.
Who wasn't clamoring for more Police songs in 2018?
Yeah. It sounds straight from like the 70s, 80s rock era, and it's a really good track. Another one that I listened to a lot this year was Fireworks by First Aid Kit.
Why do I this?
That album Ruins was pretty good, also on my honorable mentions and albums. Saw them live this year. Very, very good live. Only reason this song doesn't make it into my top 11 is just because of how strong the top 11 are. Clearly the best song on that album, though, for me. Another song that really needs to be mentioned is The Joke by Brandi Carlile.
They come to kick dirt in your face, to call you weak and then displace you after carrying your baby on your back across the desert. I saw your eyes behind your hair, and you're looking tired, but you don't look scared.
I feel like it's really hard to write protest songs or like uplifting songs in this day and age without being insincere.
Labeled as the protest song.
Yeah, and this one really toes that line really well. The only song that made me cry this year.
That is surprising. I thought there would be more.
No, it's mostly movies that do that to me.
There's no Coco of 2018 for songs.
No, Coco was Coco of 2018. I watched Coco a lot in 2018, even though it came out
still on Netflix.
2017. I believe it is. Yeah. Go. Here's another plug for Coco. Go watch that and bawl your eyes out. Yeah. The joke is kind of this song about femininity and how it's not a bad thing, even though people are trying to tell you that in 2018 still. And two really strong verses and just kind of a theatrical build to a song that could seem disingenuous if it weren't handled by somebody who has such a good touch on those things.
The joke, Lady Bird of 2018.
Yeah, there you go. Good callbacks here. Last two honorable mentions, Walk the Walk by Gaz Coombs. I got to shout out my buddy James Kennery for turning me on to Gaz Coombs. That album, really good. And this particular song really reminds me of Broken Bells, little James Mercer action there. And this just has the funkiest beat, and it's I've never gotten sick of it. I've listened to it a ton of times. And then Great No One by The Beths. That album is just so fun. And this song just kind of encapsulates how fun they can be. And little band from New Zealand that I'm kind of mad Zach discovered before I did without telling me about them.
Yeah, the Beths are definitely right up your alley. And I probably should have given you a heads up earlier than I did.
Yeah, you dropped the ball. You didn't even give me a heads up. I listened to your top 100 and I was like, hey, what the hell, man?
That's technically a heads up. I made it. You listened to it. That's a heads up.
I also went to your WordPress page probably about three times before I noticed that you addressed your top 100 list to friends, family, and Chris Gear because I fall in neither category.
That is true. You are just your own singular identity.
All right, let's get into our top 11. Okay.
So I got one quick question before you go into your top 11. How strong is your correlation between the amount of times you've listened to these songs and how high they are? Because there are
very,
probably...
very high.
So I listen to all of these songs a lot, but they don't fall in the songs I listen to the most end up being my number one, two, and three. There's a little bit of disparity between the two.
Okay, so my 2, 3, 4, and 5 are probably my most listened to songs of the year. And then the rest, probably not so much. Number one, mostly recency bias, but I think it'll hold up well.
Yeah. Mine's pretty close, but there are definitely songs in here where it's more about how much they can mean in a specific environment that propels them a little bit higher, rather than just being a universal song.
That's the new most pretentious thing that you have to top going forward.
Yes. You know, I just got to keep one-upping myself.
It's all right. My number 11 is going to be a little pretentious.
All right, you want to start it off then?
Yeah, sure. Beach Life and Death by Car Seat Headrest.
So you're the first one doing a 13-minute song, right? Just want to make that clear.
Yes. It's a little bit cheating because it's basically three songs in one. They all kind of follow the same theme, so you can tell each one belongs in that song. But I love each movement of that song. And for the most part, when I have a 13-minute song on a playlist, I will generally skip it after I've listened to it a couple of times. But this one keeps coming back. It's been a good year for punk influenced things, and this Beach Life and Death definitely has one of its three movements is very punk influenced, and lyrically it's really interesting. It's kind of a fun journey.
Yeah, I mean, I've always enjoyed Car Seat Headrest. I've I've never quite fallen into them the way that they kind of seem to be fallen in with by a lot of other people. It's, I can't pinpoint one part about them, but I feel like they're missing something for me to totally be into it.
Reminds me of a combination of
Pizza Hut and Taco Bell.
Beck. Yeah. of Beck and Wolf Parade, if that makes any sense.
Which Beck? There are lots of Becks.
Older Beck, like
Odelay Beck?
Odelay Beck, yeah.
Okay. All right. I can definitely see that. They played I think it was not Letterman, maybe Fallon. And did Bodies and had a great performance of that.
That was number 2 or 3 in my rankings of songs on that album.
Yeah. They seem to be pretty fun live, but I don't think I can stand their lead singer in a conversation. So my number 11, so when I make my playlist, I try and limit it to one song per album just so I can at least put a little bit of mental parameters on mine.
Oh yeah, we should have had the stipulation set beforehand. There will be no repeat artists, otherwise my entire list would be like 3 artists.
Yeah. So my song is All the Words Are Made Up by The Voids. And this is one where I had trouble picking out which song I liked the most off that album.
We can talk about in a couple songs what songs you were trying to choose between, because I also had that issue.
Sure. I think Curious, spelled just asininely, was up there.
That was my number 3 choice.
So Curious, My Friends, The Walls. I really like Leave It in My Dreams. That one's pretty like classic Strokes-y.
Yeah, I think that's the one most people enjoyed off of that album, just because it harkens back to Strokes era Julian Casablancas.
But I ended up settling with All the Words They're Made Up. It's just a fun ass track. I don't know. I've enjoyed The Voids' more recent output more than The Strokes' more recent output, because it's kind of Julian being the weirdo he is and kind of experimenting with styles. Curious is just like a straight-up Middle Eastern song with a bunch of vocoder over top.
Yep.
All the Words
I really love it.
Has just ended up being a song that I've put on repeat pretty consistently.
Yeah, before I listened to your top 100, I was very curious what song you would put on your yeah, sorry about that. That was totally unintentional. Which Void song would put in your top 100? And I was surprised at your choice. And then when I listened to your playlist, I was like, all right, Zach, yeah, I can see this.
It's really good. I don't know. Listen to this whole album, come up with the idea yourself, but this song's great. All right, what's your number 10?
My number 10 is Hang Out at the Gallows by Father John Misty. Sun is rising, black is turning blue. Look out, buddy, no one's calling. Jesus, man, what did you do? It's just super catchy and it's classic Father John Misty. Has some cool little minor key changes and stuff like that that kind of rope you in.
Yeah, I love moments in songs, and when he really hits the high note on What's Your Politics, What's Your Religion, that's definitely my favorite little point in the song.
Yep.
It's my favorite off the album as well. Just missed an honorable mention. It's a really good song.
Yeah. I was between Hang Out at the Gallows and Mr. Tillman, just because what is better than a song about a hotel concierge telling Josh Tillman that the people in this hotel aren't people rehearsing for a movie and there actually are guests, you should probably stop pissing them off because they're getting weirded out.
You call me pretentious.
No, Hang Out at the Gallows is really good. He's one of my favorite lyricists, and one thread that kind of supports all my songs is that they're pretty lyrically strong. And yeah, he wrote most, if not all, of the songs off of God's Favorite Customer while going through a personal crisis. But when is he not going through a personal crisis? So
that's true. I mean, so my first real interaction with Father John Misty was, we got, me, my friend Carl, and my friend Allison got free tickets to this music and food festival called the Great Googa Mooga a couple years ago. And we're all very under the weather on a Saturday morning for some mysterious reason. And
diplomatically put,
it was Father John Misty and then Matt and Kim. So we got some food from these,
yikes,
like, these very good food trucks, and wandered over and listened to him play. And like, he was playing really well. He's an incredible singer, fantastic songwriter. But their stage banter in between songs was the most obnoxious, pretentious shit in the world. They're at a food festival, and he's talking on stage. He's like, "You know what my favorite food is? It's air."
I think my favorite part of that is that you're holding up an air microphone to mimic him on a podcast.
How dare you? This is an audio medium. No one needs to know what I'm doing visually.
Nice Patriots hat, man.
Thank you. So yeah, that was my first real interaction. So it took about a year and a half for me to actually listen to him legitimately after that, because I couldn't stand him. It turns out he's great.
Yeah. I still have never really dived in too much into him. I listened to I Love You Honey Bear a lot, but this album I didn't really listen to until maybe like a month ago.
Yeah. I mean, he's also a formative part of those early Fleet Foxes albums. So he's been in a lot of incredible music. My number 10 is Over and Over and Over by Jack White. That is my favorite guitar sound of the year. The riff that he has. It's a classic Jack White song with just some weirdness thrown into it. Those like shrill, shrieky voices that he has in the background chorus of the song. I didn't really enjoy it first, and then they slowly grew on me. Now I just love them. It's a great, 3.5-4 minute track, super guitar led, good solos. It's a hell of a track.
Yeah, I like it. My favorite track off the album was Connected by Love, and that's kind of at the back end of my top 33.
Yeah, I don't know. There's something about that riff that just I love. It's so good.
All right, my number 9, Pink Ocean by The Voids. That was the one that I ended up with. It was between that and Alienation for me. Both kind of have these repetitive kind of hip-hop beats. And I think Pink Ocean was just stronger musically, has a really good solo in it. And Julian Casablancas' vocals in that song are pretty impressive for a guy who's been doing something completely different for a long time in his career. And now he's kind of making kind of faux pop music, and it's really interesting.
I feel like he's always written pretty poppy hooks, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, in 2001, that garage rock was kind of pop music at the time, so I'm not saying he's hasn't been at the forefront of pop music for this long, but he definitely changed his style.
Fair.
Doing falsetto hooks is always interesting.
Yeah, I mean, there are no wrong tracks to be your favorite off this album other than Think Before You Drink. That song's garbage. So my number 9 is I Shall Love Too by Julia Holter. Her last album, something Wilderness, I forget the exact name. Hold on one sec. Everyone loves this. Have You in My Wilderness was one of my favorite songs of a couple years ago. This was the lead single to that. It's a pretty typical song that kind of breaks down into a little bit of controlled chaos at the end with a lot of looping vocals and layering. And her voice is just so incredibly strong in that song. It really took me away as soon as I heard it. And this is one of those songs that I don't listen to quite as much as some of the others. But when I do want to listen to it, it still blows me away every single time.
Number 8 for me, Forest Green by Big Red Machine. That's a lot of colors. I was gonna give you all of my time, more time, more time. For me, this another. Who would have thought that members from the National hooking up with? I think it's just
Justin Vernon.
Yeah, it wasn't multiple members of Bon Iver, but who would have thought that would be a good album? This is another one of those where you could have chosen like 4 or 5 songs, and I wouldn't have said anything bad about it.
And this one, just fact, I did pick a different song off this album.
I put back to back with Pink Ocean because even though they're very different songs, they have similar kind of repetitive Pink Ocean's more guitar and piano hooks, but Forest Green has this really cool bass hook that has a like addictive breakbeat in it, and I just can't get enough of it. So that's pretty much all I need to say about that. I mean, Justin Vernon's vocals are good. It's not lyrically special. It's not lyrically special or anything, but it's pretty repetitive. But I mean,
those breakbeats.
He's lending his vocals more as an instrument than anything else, and it's.
Yeah, he's really come into like that
as instrumental,
as a tool in his arsenal, where his vocals are an instrument rather than the focus.
There's even a section of that song where he distorts his vocals, and it's kind of weird and trippy.
Yeah, he's a weird fucking dude. My number 8 is "Luminous Beings" by John Hopkins. I feel like it would be weird if I didn't have a, 10-ish minute ambient instrumental electronic track, which I seem to have every single year. This is it's a little spacey for what John Hopkins usually does. Not so driven. And this is another one I get lost in pretty easily. It's not quite the road trip song that Failsafe is, but it's a kind of zone out, listen to it, get lost in it kind of electronic song. It goes through ebbs and flows. It builds. I saw him play this live, where he does a lot of live looping and live instrumentation, and it was fantastic. If you can see John Hopkins live, do it. You won't be let down. And yeah, you know, take 10 minutes out of your life and listen to this song.
I believe John Hopkins' album Immortality was one of the first on our Immunity. There we go. One of our first on the music book club when we did that for like 3 months.
Oh God, we're really good at starting things and then stopping them immediately.
Yeah.
When
we it was a good idea, and then yeah,
sounds like us.
My number 7 is Souvenir by Boy Genius.
When you cut a hole into my skull, do you hate what you see? Like I do.
Once again, one of those collaborations where you'd think, man, this could go totally wrong, having three of the most talented people in the world play music together. But somehow it worked.
Somehow.
If you're not familiar with Boy Genius, it's Lucy Dacus, Julian Baker, and Phoebe Bridgers. And they're all phenomenally talented vocalists and instrumentalists. And yeah, so it works.
Shocker.
And I thought Souvenir was the best track off of that album.
I think Souvenir is pretty clearly the best track off that one. While I like the others, it's what, a little 6-7 song EP.
Yeah.
I think most people came away thinking that Souvenir was the best. Your Dog, you know, might have had some people, but I really think that Souvenir was the strongest one off that.
Yeah. It's a little upsetting that Lucy Dacus doesn't have as much of a featured role in that song, because it is the most popular of the songs on that album, but hey, yeah, you know, whatever. She had her own success this year.
That one seems like Julian Baker wrote it.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Phoebe Bridgers wrote her own verse too, because that is her naturally depressing. I mean, I guess they're both pretty depressing.
Yeah, I was about to say, are you saying that the Julian Baker music is not the most depressing you've heard recently?
Yeah, well,
yeah,
it's a good song.
A song that's surprisingly not depressing, Tenderness by Parquet Courts, comes in at number 7 for me.
Well, I can't count how many times I've been outdone by nihilism. Join the mods that spits an open heart into a schism. I cower at the thought of other people's expectations, and yet still hand over my mind to them.
This is the closing track of their most recent album, Wide Awake. And so I think you know this very clearly, is I am a big fan of an instrument mimicking a vocal when it works well. Killer Crane by TV on the Radio is a great example of this.
Raising the Skate by Speedy Ortiz.
Totally works as well. And it's just a little catchy piano tune right at the end. I forget the lead singer's name, but he has a weird fucking voice that's a lot of, it's very shout singy.
Ramonesy, very Ramonesy.
Yeah, but he kind of reins it in for this song. And I don't know, it's so fucking catchy. This is one that I've played, you know, almost more than any other song this year. It's a great end of the album. It works perfectly, and I can't recommend it enough.
Yeah, so this kind of feeds into what I've been saying about punk influence being big this year. That Parquet Courts album definitely had some punk influences. My favorite song off that album was Freebird 2.
Yeah.
Wonderful song. I love the
Better
audacity
song or
too.
Name?
Honestly, Hard to say because they're both phenomenal. I had Freebird 2 in my top 33. Just now that I think about it, it probably should be an honorable mention, but I can't list all of my top 33 as honorable mentions.
That's why we have rules, Christopher.
Yeah, and we're really good at following them. Yeah, but to continue that, my number 6 is a song called 9 out of 10 by Jeff Rosenstock. Tired of feeling selfish.
I think this is the only song I've never heard off your list.
So you're saying you didn't listen to my top 33?
No, I did not. Not you made it like 3 days ago.
Give me a break. No, I didn't. I made it last week. So in the context of this album, I think this song is better than it is on its own because the album is such a punk album that having a song that is a little bit loungy and layers instruments so well, it breaks up that album, and it's kind of, it takes you back a little bit, and it's a really beautiful song about depression and loneliness in crowded spaces and stuff like that. And it just, the addition of different instruments in each verse and then backing vocals as it goes on is really nice. And I listened to this album maybe like January of 2018 and didn't really revisit it until I was trying to put together my best albums of 2018. And when I revisited, I really started listening to this song a lot, and yep. Love it.
I guess I'll have to listen to it.
Yeah, you probably should someday.
Yeah, somebody should get on that. My number 6 comes from Lump. It's their lead single, Curse of the Contemporary. Laura Marling side project. I don't know. It's their most straightforward song off this little EP. And I love her super falsetto voice in the verse, or the pre-chorus, I guess. I think it's just a super well-written song. The video still weirds me out with the weird fuzzy hair monster dancing around. That seems like someone's like PhD freshman or like first year PhD senior project.
So I don't know if you know this, but if you listen to that album on Spotify on your phone with Spotify open, it automatically just has a video of that thing dancing around with every song.
I did not know that. But I don't know if that's going to make me want to listen to it more or less on Spotify.
Well, usually you have your phone closed when you're listening to stuff on Spotify.
That is true.
I mean, at least I do.
Yeah. I don't know. We are both ardent fans of Laura Marling.
Yeah, a little bit of an upset that you have a Laura Marling song actually on your list, and I only have her in my honorable mentions because, as you know, I am absolutely obsessed with her.
Yeah. It's a damn good song. The name and album cover I could do without, but the music's great.
Yeah, Lump's a little weird name. I think that song in particular fell victim to my aversion to lead singles because, as we know, I'm obsessed with Laura Marling. So as soon as that song came out, I was listening to it nonstop. And by the time the album came out, I was just basically skipping it every time I listened to the album.
How dare you? It's unacceptable.
Yeah, my number 5, the song I listened to the most in 2018 was Ops by Kendrick Lamar, featuring Vince Staples and Eugen Blackrock off of the I don't believe it was called the Black Panther soundtrack. I think it was Black Panther the album.
You're dead to me.
Watch me do my shit.
You're dead to me. You're dead to me.
Hey, hey, ready, set, go crazy. Hit it finesse. You see, I'm getting mice. Life hit a nigga with the lemons, limelight. But at night, we still committing crimes, spinning rhymes. By the coupe with the spinning rim, get inside. Bring a friend, bleeding hands from the genocide. Clean me up, beam me up to the other side. Brothers die because coons turn their butterflies.
One of the only songs off of the album to actually be featured in the film. And it was a very up-tempo electronic version of the song that they featured during a car chase, I believe.
That was early on in the movie, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's before the robo hippos came in. No, robo
rhinos. I believe it takes place in Korea.
Oh, yeah.
So I could not get enough of this song. I don't know why. I love the just like deep, heavy bass beat, and two of probably my three favorite rappers right now at their best on a track, and then a local South African rapper kind of keeping up with them. I never got sick of this song all year.
Yeah, I mean, so something I've noticed about this list is there's a lot of hip hop on my list between 20 and 100, but not much of it, if any, made the top 15. And I don't know. It's another thing where I think there was a lot of good, not a ton of great this year.
It wasn't a great year for hip hop. I wasn't disappointed, I would say, because we've gotten so much good hip hop in the last 2 years or so. And we did get a couple of really good hip hop albums, so it's not like I don't have something to revisit this year.
Yeah, it's I liked the song. It didn't quite grip me like it did for you. I don't think it's a bad song in any way. I think I like X more off that album.
There are plenty of songs off that album that people could enjoy more. This one just kind of hit me.
How dare you like a specific song?
Yeah. Also, I just really love Vince Staples, and anytime he's on something.
Fun should have been an honorable mention for me off Vince Staples FM. That's a great little project. I mean, it's what?
Didn't care for it that much. It's weird. When Vince Staples does like little EPs and stuff like that, I generally don't enjoy them.
It's so good.
But his full albums are just... Yes. Big Fish, man. I'll listen to Big Fish every day for the rest of my life if I have to. And I might have to.
In what situation would you have to?
Gun to my head.
Anyway. So this next song is 5 on my list and 4 on your list.
So we can talk about it.
This is the song that gave you tinnitus, right?
Yeah, I got a little bit of tinnitus from it. It wasn't this song. It was the opening band for Rolling Blackout's Coastal Fever. Although they didn't help.
You got to be the weirdo like me wearing earplugs to shows now.
I'm going to start, especially, so it was like a really small club show, and I was standing right next to the speaker.
Yeah, that's how it happens.
And... yeah, I couldn't got hear me anything admits. By the time I got out of there.
Anyway, our hearing loss aside, Talking Straight by Rolling Blackout's Coastal Fever. 5 on my list, 4 on Chris's.
Lean your face, hopeless, no embrace. I want to know where the silence comes from, where space originates.
Just fucking catchy, man. It's I don't know how much else to say about it.
It's 3 guitar parts, beautifully layered. I believe 3 vocalists during this song, maybe 4, both switching off and at the same time. Mm-hmm. And lyrically, it's interesting and at the same time catchy, as you said. That chorus, man, like put that on like a video of just like picturesque Australian countryside, just and put it on repeat.
Picturesque Australian countryside. So the desert?
Yeah.
Every time you're driving through the desert, you have to listen to this song.
I was thinking more like beachside highways.
I can do that. PCH?
Sure.
We'll live with that. Yeah. I mean, see them live.
It was a song that I listened to a lot during the summer this year. I have like a summer vibes playlist, and this was like the number one summer vibes song.
I think this is my most played song this year. It's great. It's
probably my number four most played song and my number four song of the year.
Wow, look at you. Making sense with your plays. Go see them live if you can as well. They put on a really good show. They have like seven as long singers as and five you're not band in a, members.
Yeah, just don't do it in a small room and stand right next to the speaker without earplugs in.
Wear earplugs, kids. My number four is a Big Red Machine song.
Well, we better not fuck this up. Well, we better not fuck this up.
Actually, I grappled with this one as well. I ended up with Gratitude. It's one of their weirder songs off this one, I think. It's a lot of Justin Vernon with his more recently found auto-tuned vocals just going, you better not fuck this up, and kind of crooning over that for a while.
Loudly as well.
Loudly. But the kind of guitar loop that they have under that, I fucking adore. It was between this and I Won't Run From It, which is the most typical song of this album, which I think is a compliment to the album.
What was the name of the first song on the album?
The name of the first song was Deep Green.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to choose a song with the color green in it.
Yeah, the song titles could be better, but the music itself is great. It really was a 33 or 22 a million song in a lot of ways, in the looping guitar, the auto-tune vocals, the runtime. I think it's like 6 minutes or something like that. It's weird. It's great. I think it works. The Dessners do. One of the Dessners, forget which one. Aaron.
One of them's like Brian or something.
Yeah, I think it's Brian and Aaron. Does great orchestration for the guitar parts. They have some of the best songs of the year on this album.
Yeah. So I think Gratitude was my number three or four track off that album. And I saw it more as like a really good song to tie together a bunch of very good songs than like a headliner, but I could absolutely see why you enjoy it.
It's so good. It's so good.
All right. We're getting into the fucking powerhouse songs now.
Oh, don't say it like that.
my number three song, probably the song I listen to second or third most all year, is The Games We Play by Pusha T.
This ain't for the conscious. This is for the mud-made monsters who grew up on legends from out of Yonkers. Influenced by niggas straight out of Compton. The scale never lies. I'm 2.2 incentivized. If you ain't energized like the bunny for drug money, or been paralyzed by the sight of a drug mummy, this ain't really for ya. This is for the Goya Montoya, who said I couldn't stop then afforded me all the lawyers.
If you know me at all, you know that Pusha T is one of my favorite rappers of all time, and probably my favorite right now. And I believe I said in an earlier podcast, I made the bold claim that The Games We Play is one of his best tracks that he's ever done. And I'm going to be listening to this forever. And I'm happy to say that I haven't given up on that yet. I think it's one of Kanye's best beats. The strings on that, even with the treble turned up a little bit too high, the strings on that are really cool. It's just a cool repetitive beat that goes through the entire song. And those, man, Pusha just comes with the lyrics, and it's him at his best. And I wouldn't be mad if you picked, I don't know, maybe 6 of the 7 tracks off that album.
Which is the one you don't like?
I mean, it's not that I don't like. I forget what it's the last one, Infrared.
Oh, yeah.
It's not that I don't like it. It's just more of like it's a closing track. It's not like a your favorite track on the album kind of song.
Yeah. We'll talk more about this album in the album
will we?
Section. Yes. Yes, we will. My number 3 song is the opening track for the new Idols album, Joy is an Act of Resistance. The song's Colossus. Has about a 3.5-4 minute slow building opener. Idols are a British punk band that has a very left leaning. I'm trying to think about the best ways to put this. They're a like sex positive, LGBT friendly. Very open borders, anti-Brexit band that came out with a couple albums in the past, and I think this one is just a magnificent album. It's aggressive, but friendly and open. The guitar layering.
It's a weird dichotomy.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the lyrics in this song is, like Stone Cold Steve Austin, I put homophobes in coffins.
Yeah, that's a pretty good distillation of who they are.
A line that I fucking love, by the way.
Yeah, it's just, you can just, even in a studio recording where a lot of energy gets lost compared to a live one, I think this carries over. Basically every other song on this album is more of a stereotypical verse-chorus, bridge kind of style, and they're all great, but this song, man, it builds.
It has Zach written all over it.
It has a fucking payoff. It's so good.
Yeah, I really like this song. I was looking for songs to add to my top 33 because I was feeling the back end was pretty weak, and I was listening to your playlist, and this song came on, and I was like, where have I heard this before? And it's still bothering me. I have no idea where I first heard it. And I have a specific remembrance of when he says full of pins. I originally thought he was saying full of Pims. So Pims Cup.
You know where you might have heard this? Is at my house the night you got sick.
Maybe. I feel like it was earlier than that, though. I want to say I was in like a brewery or something.
Yep. I bet people that drink beer listen to this music, so that's not out of the question.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's a fucking great song. Listen to that song.
Yeah, on either of our playlists, you will find it. My number 2 is Charity by Courtney Barnett. Talking about albums where you could have picked 5 or 6 songs off of the album and no one would blink at that. This one has It started as my favorite track the first time I listened to the album, and maybe for like the first month or two that I was listening to it, then shifted over to a couple other songs, and it came right back to Charity. Especially after I saw her play it live. Those guitar fills are some of my favorite moments in music of the year. And she plays a lot of lead guitar at the end of the choruses too, while she's still singing. And it builds really well. I can't say enough good stuff about this song. It's catchy as hell lyrically. It's on its face might seem nice and simple, but has some deeper meanings to its words. And those are the types of songs that I really like to dive into and listen to a lot.
Yeah, I mean, Courtney Barnett has a really impressive way of putting some pretty complex emotions in pretty straightforward lyrics. And I think that really shines on this song.
And I think that's, to be totally pretentious, that's also mirrored in how she orchestrates her songs musically. Because a lot of the backing guitars are very simple chord progressions, but when layered with different lead guitar riffs, it makes it a little more complex and stuff I really enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't listened to any music that she's come out with that I've disliked. I've never quite liked something quite as much as you like this song, but it's always, you know, just almost there. I think Depreston is still my favorite song by her, off her last album.
Yep. It's a good one. But that's another one of those simple rhymes, but like deep lyrics.
Yeah. Well, Just You Wait. not the song we're talking about, but my number two song is a song off the new Kacey Musgraves album. I picked Oh What a World, which I think is the fourth track.
Tell me it's not too good to be true.
Wasn't one of the singles. It took a couple listens for me to catch on to it. It starts with a little bit of a vocoder as the first thing you hear, which is weird for a pop country album. But I think
I'd say it qualifies more as a pop album than a pop country album at this point.
There's a little bit of country. Velvet Elvis is a country song.
Yeah.
But there's just something about her vocal delivery in this song that I absolutely adore. It's very earnest. It's very questioning. The lyrics do kind of read like the first time someone gets high and kind of just speaks out loud.
I'm glad you mentioned it.
It's, hold on. I gotta pull up, some of the lyrics. This
you are talking about your number two song right now, you realize.
Oh yeah, but I think it works. So this isn't in a negative way, because I feel like if she didn't mean it and she wrote it in that way, it would suck. But just in her delivery, she managed to pull off that mindset in an earnest way, which is really, really hard for a superstar. Like, you know, just the... It's the northern lights in our skies, plants that grow and open your mind. It's very much the freshman in college who's trying weed for the first time.
And hits bong once.
Hits bong once. But it's very earnest. It's whimsical in a way. And the chorus just kind of lets you float and listen. And the way it loops with the vocoder on the outro, I think is really, really amazing. And one of my favorite, if not my favorite musical moments of the entire year. It's a really, really good song off a really, really good album. And one that I didn't love when I first listened, but on my, you know, second, third, 50th listen is still amazing.
All right. Well, I don't have too many bad things to say about that because I enjoyed that album too. My number one song is another one that I listened to the album kind of earlier in the year, upon recommendation from one of our favorite podcasts, The Watch. Really enjoyed the album, and then I just didn't really go back to it until came around time to be making these lists up, and I have gotten really
time to be making these lists up.
Yeah, that was a sentence you could say. the song is Night Shift by Lucy Dacus. I alluded to this a little bit when talking about Boy Genius. She had her moments this year, even if she didn't have her moment in Souvenir. Man, this song is lyrically incredible. It builds to kind of an angsty optimism, a defiant optimism, maybe.
Defiant, I think it's a better way to put it.
It's a song about complicated feelings for somebody who has mistreated you in a relationship where you still have feelings for that person, but maybe realize that they didn't treat you right. And it's kind of about meeting up with that person one more time and kind of getting that closure. And then the optimism of moving on after that. And it just kind of, everything with this song works so well.
I mean, this was my song 12 for some transparency. I love this song as well. This is one where if this song comes on while you're driving alone, you're going to burst your fucking vocal cords singing along to the end. It's a very defiant song. You know, it works so well. It's such a well-written song, you know, like I was talking about for the Idols song, it builds to a perfect climax. I really like the song more than her album. If I think that's fair, but this song is just so damn powerful.
One thing I've noticed, in listening to a lot of music over the past couple months is that a lot of artists are putting their best songs like right first song on the album. And I think that's kind of a strategic play to make people like, hey, let's listen to this whole album based on this one song.
Well, yeah, Spotify streaming, baby.
Streaming works. But I mean, I'm not too mad about it. And I kind of disagree with you on the whole album.
I didn't say it was bad. I just think this one is like a clear and away best song.
Oh, yeah, it wasn't, I think I put, the way, as you said, transparency, the way that I do my top songs playlist is I'll listen through an album and I'll just write down maybe the two or three songs I enjoyed the most. And a lot of the albums I had 5-6 songs, like the top albums. This one I put two or three down, and Night Shift was an easy choice.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably the most powerful song of the year.
The only one that I would say challenges it is The Joke by Brandi Carlile, which I put in my honorable mentions for that reason. Yeah. They're on a similar level of power.
Yeah. I mean, she's an incredible songwriter, and this one, just talking about her experiences and how it's an avoidance song, but for good reasons. I don't know. It's great.
Full disclosure, I had this as, I think, my number three song as late as yesterday, and then I watched a video of her playing it live on Carson Daly's show, which I didn't know was
that
a thing.
Exists?
Yeah, in front of a crowd, and...
How big's the crowd? How big is the crowd that goes to Carson Daly?
Pretty surprisingly big.
Is that in New York? Can I go to that?
Probably. Yeah, so watching the reaction of the people in the crowd as she progressed through this song, really, like, seeing these people enjoy this song for the first time, most of them, I assume, in a way that I also went through it the first time I listened to it, was really cool. Like, you can see them kind of like, oh, I don't really know how to feel about this song, as it very slowly comes together, and then that electric guitar comes in toward the middle of the song, and people in the crowd just like rocking out, like, holy crap, this is great. And then huge ovation as she finished the song.
Yeah. The lyric I was thinking of, in the refrain is, in 5 years, I hope these song feels like covers.
Yeah.
Which is
dedicated to new lovers, which is the optimistic part of that.
Yeah. And just that little refrain is so damn good. Fantastic song. I will have to look up a Carson Daly performance, which is something I never thought I would say.
The little seventh chord when she goes into Feeling All Hell is another one of my favorite musical moments of the year.
You know, there are just so many of them. in a total change of pace... my number one song is a bit of a downer, I'd say, which I think I've done for probably three of the past 5 years. It's a song by an artist named Advanced Bass, who used to go by Cassio Tone for the Painfully Alone. So, you know,
wow.
Yeah.
I would pass on that by name alone.
Really? No, sometimes it's good to feel horrifically depressed. So the song is off an album called Animal Companionship, which I think fits pretty well because you're literally holding your decrepit old dog in your lap.
Say hi, Rascal.
Yeah, his tongue's sticking out.
Yep, he does that.
As a side note, your dog gives... Every dog, like, licks someone's hand or face. It's a very dog thing to do. But your dog does it so slowly, it's almost sensual, and I don't like that at all. I know it's because his tongue can't physically move any faster, but God, it is a disconcerting feeling.
For those who don't know, I have a 15-year-old Chihuahua mix that I kind of got tricked into adopting while I was drunk at a winery. I love him and don't regret that at all, but he gives the slimiest, grossest kisses, and it's really unsettling, I think is the best word to describe it.
So is that why you like the Lucy Dacus song? Because the opening line is, the first time I tasted somebody else's fit, I had a coughing fit.
Yeah, it's not why, but that is the like hardest hitting opening line that wasn't in a rap song all year.
Anyway, after that slight digression, my favorite song of the year is the song Dolores and Kimberly by Advanced Bass.
The streets are so empty, you'd think you was the rapture.
Small singer-songwriter. My uncle actually...
Small in stature or...
No, he's a very large, balding man.
Okay.
That my uncle, Mike, actually showed me his music a couple years ago.
You have an uncle and a brother named Mike?
Yeah, it's weird. Let's not ask questions about that. Trying to talk to my mom about Mike is the most confusing thing in the goddamn world. It's like, my brother or your brother? So it's all her fault. So blame Deb. But he,
damn it, Deb.
He
also, Deb, if you're listening to this, sorry, I became sick in your house right after you were recovering from being sick. I didn't know I was sick when I got there. She seemed upset that I was there.
Well, she was sick for 3 weeks, so I think the panic of being sick for any more time really got to her.
Yeah, for sure. It's your fault.
Fair. So my Uncle Mike bought me the record, A Shut-In's Prayer, a couple years ago. And that was my first introduction.
Sounds uplifting.
To his music. It's not. So the music is just made by one dude with a keyboard and some like pre-programmed drum loops. And it's very simple. It's a lot of life experiences. And he writes his lyrics in a way that they're not complex at all. But they really give you a feel of a real life and real experiences. So this song is about a guy coming to an area post-divorce with the only person he knows and kind of them slowly building a small little life together and having her accept him for what he is. You know, there's small little lines of just acceptance, like, you let me paint the bedroom blue, that talk, you know, it seemed like he wouldn't be able to do in his past relationship, but he can now, that are just written in such a open and honest way that I can't listen to this song without feeling the emotions that he clearly put into it. And it's very slow. It's only a little simple drum beat, and it's only a little simple piano riff. But god damn, this album, or this song, is just so perfectly done to elicit emotions of kind of loss and found at the same time.
The first time I listened to this song was on your playlist, and first time I listened to it, I was surprised that you had something so simple as your number one song, but upon re-listens and actually investigating the lyricism a little bit, I see it.
Yeah, so the way I do these lists is I pick out my favorite songs from the albums and put them in and then rank it from 100 to 1. And so I go through, I put probably 100 to 90 and just rank those and then relist and then do 80 to 70 and reorganize. And every once in a while, I'm kind of shocked at what keeps going higher and higher. And this song, I was like, no, I think this song is better than this other one I was thinking about placing. And when it got down to it, I was like, it was my favorite song of the year. I enjoyed this one and got more emotion out of this song than anything else. It's damn good. Go listen to Advanced Bass, support his music. He's an incredible musician. Go see him live.
All right.
It's a depressing note because,
and that concludes our podcast. Just kidding. We're halfway done.
speaking of halfway done, I need to pee. I'll be right back.
All right. Leave it recording. I'm gonna figure out what to do with this dog.
Yeah, he'll die in your lap.
And we're back. Zach had to pee, so
I had to move your
get rid of my dog. Yeah. If he scratches on my door to come to bed, then I'll probably pause again. But seemed like a good spot to take a break because, you know, we talked about songs for an hour, and now we'll probably talk about albums for an hour. I hope not.
Yeah, let's try and do this a little faster.
All right, Zach, you want to hit us with your honorable mention albums from 2018?
Sure. So someone who, a perfect segue from my favorite song of last year, is the album There's Always Glimmer by Gia Margaret. She actually opened for Advanced Bass when I saw her over at Babies All Right in Brooklyn. I was a little worried. So there are two openers and then Advanced Bass. The first opener was shit awful. They were absolutely terrible. And then Gia Margaret comes on. I've never heard of her before. And it's just her, a little loop pad, and a acoustic guitar. And she was phenomenal. She wrote a, a little 11-song debut album. And it's just really good singer-songwriter, easy to listen to music. Another album I really, really enjoyed was Room 25 by No Name. She kind of took the Rap World by Storm 2 years ago with her debut album, which I loved. And she came back with another really, really strong showing on Room 25. Janelle Monáe's Dirty Computer was something that I loved the highs of it. There were some parts, especially the Grimes collab Pink, that I couldn't really get into. But I think it was about 75% great and 25% forgettable, which makes a very good album in this modern era. But let's just leave Grimes to her Elon Musk weirdness.
Maybe she just enjoys his Musk.
Don't say that. I think she got deposed today, or is going to get deposed. So that's an interesting wrinkle.
Claire.
One that we both have is Father John Misty's God's Favorite Customer. We talked about that a good amount earlier, so I'm just going to brush over it. Beach House's 7, I really enjoyed. Beach House hasn't made a bad album. Every album that they've put out has been very good to incredible.
Don't care for Beach House.
You're a fucking idiot.
Yep, sorry.
They 7 is fantastic. It is just so easy to listen to, but has depth and layers, and Victoria's songwriting is just so good still. After 7 albums, they have the same sound. They sound very similar, but there's still variations of that they go on and go through that work really well. I talked about Tenderness off this album, but Wide Awake by Parquet Courts was a return to form. Their last few albums with their weird spellings were good, but not great.
I did enjoy the double album with different spellings for each album.
Yeah, that was bizarre. You know, more power to them. They're
about, you gotta have an alter ego sometimes.
They're about as Brooklyn of a band as you can have. But Wide Awake, I thought, was really, really strong. You mentioned Freebird 2. Wide Awake, the lead single, is funky as hell and fun. It's one of the, you know, it's a front to backer. You can listen to just about every song and have a good time. Same goes with FM by Vince Staples. You said you didn't love it that much, but I really love the concept of kind of like a summer radio playlist turned album. Every song's about 2.5 minutes. It's quick. It's catchy hooks. It's you know, I wouldn't call it a fantastic album, but I've listened to it a bunch because every time it ends, you're like, oh, I can do that again. And there aren't a ton of guests on it, but when they do, they add just enough to make the songs better. And then my last honorable mention is by Helena Deland. My friend Carl turned me on to this artist. And it's a series of 4 2-to-3 song EPs that's entitled From the Series of Songs Altogether Unaccompanied, versions 1 through 4. And she is a pretty fantastic singer-songwriter that put out these little EPs and chunklets that I'm just putting all together because we cheat at this podcast.
Yeah, it's we're not a rules podcast.
No, we are a rules podcast, but we specifically break them.
All right, let's get into my honorable mentions. First, Clean by Soccer Mommy, originally an album I refused to listen to because that band's name is so god-awful bad.
It's not great.
I eventually got around to it and didn't make my top 11 just because it's, I don't think it's
just because of the name.
I don't think it's a cover to cover album. It's got like 3 or 4 really strong songs and then a few that are just kind of filler and then a couple that I don't really enjoy that much. Next we got Lush by Snail Mail. This was a little closer to being in the top 11. I really enjoyed a lot of the songs on this album, but it's a little bit too one note for me. It's not super varied in terms of song to song. Some of them sound very similar to each other.
But as someone who loves Beach House, how dare you say that?
I do think Lindsay's a very talented guitarist and is a really good lead singer as well. So excited for future stuff from that band. As you discussed, God's Favorite Customer, we talked about that enough. Redemption by J-Rock. We're discussing how this wasn't a great year for hip-hop, but I did think that Redemption was a pretty strong album. The more I listened to it, I enjoyed it a lot more. And I think the first time I listened to it was just on the road on the way back from LA, and I was like, all right, I can dig this album. And then maybe went 3 or 4 months without revisiting it, and I'm glad that I've kind of gone over it a few more times over the past couple months.
How do you feel about Win?
Win, the song?
Yeah.
Couldn't even begin to tell you which one that is. I'm not somebody who always looks at the track titles when I'm listening to albums.
Well, it's the one that goes win, 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 win.
Okay, didn't care for it.
Fuck everyone else. Win, 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 win.
I imagine that's one that I skip. Yeah. I think Redemption's a very strong, like, 5-track album and then a bunch of filler.
Yeah, so I can see that.
As far as hip-hop albums go this year, it's among the best, but as we discussed, it's not a great year for hip-hop, unless you really like trap music, which, fine if you do, but I don't care for it. This is an album we disagreed upon. Tranquility Base Hotel and Casino by the Arctic Monkeys. I wouldn't say I really enjoyed it. Very similar to the previous albums I was discussing, it's got a few really strong tracks on it and then a lot of very confusing choices.
I don't like this album at all.
I think the title track was pretty close to being on my honorable mentions for songs just because I think Alex Turner's voice has gotten significantly better over the years. He must have a really good vocal coach because every album you can hear an improvement, and he has just a really good solid singing voice, and I think lyrically he'll have a couple of tracks that are just garbage trash, and then he'll have something like Tranquility Base Hotel and Casino where just talking about weird nonsense and I'm into it.
Nah, this album's bad.
Well, you can go fuck yourself. another honorable mention, Ruins by First Aid Kit. This was one of the first albums I listened to, and I kind of just kept listening to it all throughout the year. I know you didn't enjoy it quite as much as I did because of the like constant harmony, but that's kind of what happens when you have two sisters who are both trying to be the lead singer of the band. The only reason it's not in my top 11 is because they're both from Sweden and they kind of affect this Southern accent to seem like, I don't know, country folk artists. And I know that kind of dishonesty bothers me a little bit, but still good music. Honestly, I saw them live, as I mentioned earlier, and the way they speak, you wouldn't even be able to tell that they're from Sweden anyway. They're very Americanized, so I don't have a huge problem with it. And then my last honorable mention is Twin Fantasy by Car Seat Headrest. I think the only reason this didn't make my top 11 is because, okay, you got one 13-minute track, and that's cool to re-listen to a bunch of times if you really like it, but then there are like two more 6-minute tracks and an 11-minute track, and it just gets a little exhausting, so I'm pretty sure I only listened to this entire album all the way through 3 times all year.
It's not a lot.
While I really enjoyed it, it's not something I revisited a lot. So I think this falls more in the category of artistic merit versus personal enjoyment.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. It's also a remaster of an older album. So that's it's not even a remaster. It's a reimagining of their older album. So good on them to do that. But yeah, it was good. It's a little long.
Yeah. You could say the same about a bunch of albums this year, but I think it's one thing to have like 16 tracks on your album, like The Voids, which we'll talk about and have talked about. It's another thing to have like 15 tracks and then it's like an hour and 20 minutes long.
Yes, I'll definitely agree. As a heads up, we are going to re-talk about a bunch of the same artists from our songs list. It turns out when you put together your songs and albums list, they end up getting pretty similar.
Mine, I didn't put together my full albums list until today. And yeah, after I put it together, I noticed that a lot of it lines up very heavily with my songs list.
Yeah. If we take my a little later songs, there's more variation, but the top is pretty close to the top.
The top is the top.
The top is the top. Listen to Amnesia
Scanner. As Sean McVay says, the standard is the standard.
Yeah, so for albums, let's go through this relatively quickly because I feel like we've talked about these a bunch.
We talked it to death.
My number 11 is actually Animal Companionship, the Advanced Bass album. Even though it has my favorite song of the year, and 11's a really, you know, high position, it has some very strong songs, and there are no bad songs on this album, but there's a couple that I feel like don't quite hit their emotional peaks as much as Dolores and Kimberly does. And for a very similar sounding album, if not all of the same sounds deliver, you kind of get lost in it, which is way more of a negative review for my almost 10th favorite album. I still recommend it a lot, but, I feel like with a few minor tweaks, it could have been my favorite.
Okay. My number 11 is Elastic Days by Jay Maskus.
Love Jay.
Yeah, as any listener of this podcast will know, we love Jay Maskus and his silver flowing locks. Anytime we're in Amherst, I always hope to see him walking his very small dog and hanging out with his child. And
that sounds weird.
Holding a skateboard.
Dog is fine. Okay. Child is weird.
I mean, like, teaching his kid how to skateboard is kind of adorable.
All right.
yeah, this while I didn't have any of his songs off this album on my top 11 or honorable mention, it's very much a return to the Tied to a Star motif. His last album, Tied to a Star, was just a back to front, like, really good album. And this kind of follows that, in that you can just listen to it all the way through without skipping anything. And while there's maybe a standout or two, it's mostly just like, all right, solid song after solid song. And he kind of sprinkled in some of his like awesome guitar solos too, which was nice. Not a lot of those on his previous couple solo albums, and it's cool to hear that.
Yeah, he's really fucking good at playing guitar.
Yep.
Granted, growing silver hair as well, so.
Yeah, and wearing hipster glasses.
So good. Love Jay. Jay, when I see you in Amherst, will awkwardly still drink at the bar with you. My number 10 album is Freedom by Eamon Dunes. I talked about this a little bit with the song Time on my favorite songs list. This is one that came on pretty late for me. I didn't hear about it until I was doing kind of the cleanup for albums in the year, and saw this mentioned a couple places. He is a really, really talented singer-songwriter. And I'm not really sure how to categorize his music. It's drony without that negative connotation. He manages to write songs that don't have a ton of emotion shift and kind of churn, but in a good way. It is one of my favorite new artists I've discovered this year, so I'm excited to kind of see what he's doing soon and dig into his back catalog a little bit more. So Eamon Dunes, Freedom, definitely listen to that album.
All right, my number 10, shocker, the album that we had trouble deciding together whether or not, or which song to put in our top 11, Virtue by The Voids.
It's in my top 10. It's my number 5.
Yeah, I didn't enjoy this album all the way through. I mean, I think that's going to happen on any album where you got 16 tracks. But, I mean, having that many really good songs, I'm going to throw it on there. I think that's the only reason why I didn't have it as high as you did, is because I had a few songs that I didn't really care for as much.
Think Before You Drink.
Yeah, I mean, if you cut this 16-track album down to, like, a 12-track album, it probably would have been, like, my number 2 or 3 favorite of the year.
Yeah. I just love that Julian Casablancas is being a little weirder and making some music that is clearly still him and has his... I mean, he's still one of the best hook writers I've ever heard in indie music.
Yeah.
But has, you know, he'll write a fucking Middle Eastern Arabic sounding song that is still him. And that's really incredible.
This is a great poster album for the genres are stupid movement.
Why not? Definitely a part of that movement.
Why not just write songs and not worry about whether they fall into a certain genre?
So good.
It's pretty nice.
Yeah. My number 9 is Little Dark Age by MGMT. I love MGMT. I don't think they've had a bad album. I think they have gotten a pretty bad rap as far as their post-Oracular Spectacular days goes. That's another one for the 2008-10-year college
for sure
masterclass albums, along with Animal Collective and Phoenix,
which they made on their laptop.
Yeah. But I thought that Little Dark Age is really incredible. They have some weird,
it's a good little songs. Dark album.
She Works Out Too Much, Me and Michael. It's a weirder album than I think it gets credit for. The song Little Dark Age is emo as hell.
I had that in my top 33. I love that song. That's one that I've been listening to all year.
She Works Out Too Much kind of reminds me a little bit of Ariel Pink in a good way.
Yeah.
Kind of that playfulness to it. I don't know. I thought they tried something new even for them, and it worked out really well. Also, Congratulations is a fucking incredible album, and anyone who says otherwise is dumb.
Yeah, let's pimp out Congratulations as we usually do when MGMT gets mentioned.
Siberian Breaks, so good. All right.
I found a whistle. That's mine.
Anyway.
My number 9 is Big Red Machine by Big Red Machine. Yeah, Justin Vernon, members of the National. You can't miss on that.
Yeah.
And it sounds exactly like what you'd think it would sound like in a really good way.
But I feel like that makes it sound samey. I think they did a really good job of varying up the styles of songs on this album.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't sound like Justin Vernon being the lead singer for the National.
Yes.
It sounds like the perfect combination of both to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, Justin Vernon's weirdness with the, I guess, technical musical ability of the National.
The Destiners.
Yeah, it works.
Yeah. I feel like we kind of get that way with Julian Casablancas and The Voids, where this is their weird side outlet.
I'm glad, not to go back too much, but I'm glad that they changed their name from Julian Casablancas and The Voids to just The Voids.
Same.
Because that band is really good.
Yes.
They have some very talented musicians.
Yeah, totally agree. So this album is actually number 3 for me. I really, really liked it. It's 10 songs, and I think something we're going to harp on for a little bit is that in this day and age especially,
in this little dark age.
Oh, shut the fuck up.
I'm just trying to get Zach to hang up on me.
No, that won't happen quite yet. In this time, it's really important to not have filler unless you're Drake or Migos. Because
I mean, I haven't listened to a full Drake album in
five years,
so I think it's important.
No, because that's the thing, is they can put up 25 songs and just get as many plays from their mediocre songs as possible. When you're a band that doesn't have that kind of style, you need to be concise now. That's why I was so excited when Kanye did his 7 tracks only Wyoming projects, but sadly the only great project that came out of that was Daytona. What was the actual title of Kanye's new album? Was it just
Yay?
Yay.
Yee.
It's not Yee.
I think he wanted it pronounced Yee.
you know, there are some, I liked Yikes off that album. Nas's album was fine. Kids See Ghosts, I've never been a big Kid Cudi person, but I can recognize that was a pretty decent album. But, you know, that was conciseness for conciseness's sake.
For the sake of concision?
Sure.
that's me being pretentious.
Yes. But I feel like... with 10 songs, it's long enough where it works. You know, they have some short songs, they have some decently long songs, and it doesn't overstay its welcome.
Yeah, agreed. I believe you're on number 8.
I think for both of my number 8s, I had John Hopkins. His album Singularity, he's one of my favorite, if not, I think he's my second favorite electronic artist producing right now behind Fortet. And this album is front to back just it's an incredible electronic album that is dancey at points. It manages to not stay over long on any of the songs or any of the ideas. It's about eight songs, but decently long for that range. And he's just such a masterful composer that he can write these similar sounding songs that have these slight modifications and slight edits and slight layer additions and subtractions that make it really enjoyable to listen to through all their minute changes.
All right. My number eight is Post by Jeff Rosenstock. Kind of goes with the whole Voids thing of fuck genres. The album title itself is Post and a hyphen, as in like post whatever genre or however you read that. But very punky album, but it kind of oscillates between little slower songs and some really aggressive loud songs. I enjoyed this album so much. I think the only reason I didn't have it higher is because there are a couple of two slow moments. Like there are some 6 minute tracks. I think there are 2 6-minute tracks where nothing really happens at all for a solid minute or two. And that's too much downtime for me. And it really takes me out of, especially an album that's so aggressive at points. Like it really takes me out of that. But it's for the most part, it's just electric guitar and loud vocals, but it's really interesting when he strips everything down and does something a little slower, or when he does a song like 9 out of 10, where a lot of layered instruments that are more loungy than punk rock. For sure an album that I think you would enjoy and you should check out, Zach, and that I think a lot of people who listen to this podcast would enjoy as well. Maybe something that not a lot of people listen to in 2018, but something that I'm going to hipster put on that list.
I don't even think that's hipster putting it on.
Yeah, I mean, it's an album I enjoyed, so it's there.
Fuck you, it's a good album. My number seven, I mentioned it briefly in my honorable mentions for Song of the Year, is Be the Cowboy by Mitski. There are a bunch of fantastic songs off this. None of them overstay. Geyser, like I mentioned, is probably my favorite of it. Me and My Husband is a nice little slow jam that comes in the middle. Nobody was another one fighting for a spot on my top list.
Nobody is on my top 33.
She did a performance of that just a cappella that was incredible. She has a very strong voice. I loved watching Machine Heart, that I think you were the one that didn't love it quite as much.
No.
I do talk to other people, Chris.
No, you are correct, and that was me. I meant no as in like I didn't enjoy it that much.
Yeah.
This whole album I did enjoy, but it wasn't one that I listened to a lot. The short tracks kind of, it's a little too
short,
quick change of pace for me, where like it kind of takes me out of it a little bit.
It's kind of old school punky in a way, where no track is longer than 2 minutes. Two Slow Dancers, I think, is the best, other than Tenderness, the best closer of the year. It's, you know, this very slow, pulsing ballad to end it out. And I mean, a lot of her songs talk about loneliness and isolation. It's just an incredibly well-written and well-performed album.
All right. My number seven was World's Strongest Man by Gaz Coombs. Once again, shout out to James Kennery for throwing that my way. It's very much a front-to-back listenable album with maybe 3 or 4 really strong tracks on there. Strong recommend. Go listen to that album if you like any kind of music. It's pretty universal that like somebody could just sit down and enjoy this album.
Any kind of music?
I mean, maybe not like Swedish death metal if like that's the only thing you listen to, but I don't know. This one.
What about only K-pop?
World's Strongest Man is less genre bending in the way that each song is a different genre. It's just kind of hard to classify in and of itself. It's a little bit poppy. It's a little bit indie rock. It's a little bit electronic at times.
I'm a little bit country. You're a little bit rock and roll.
Yeah. What's up, Marie?
My number six is Golden Hour by Kacey Musgraves. I'll be the first to admit I'm not much of a country fan. I'm definitely not a pop country fan, especially the kind of bro country that seems to be all the rage right now. The Sam Hunt renaissance of country music.
Zach, it's not just all the rage right now. It's been all the rage since we were in elementary school. You just kind of didn't pay attention to it.
You've been hanging out with Matt Bull too much.
It's been there, and it's just always going to be there.
No, I mean, not in the same way where it's hip-hop, but with, you know, fake country white boys singing it. That is a relatively new revelation. I mean, it's literally a trap beat where they just sing about country roads.
It's a trap beat with some slide guitar, and then they sing about country roads.
Have you ever heard Honky Tonk Badonkadonk?
Yes.
Yeah. Let's leave it at that.
Have you ever heard Honky Tonk Badonkadonk in a country bar with a mechanical bull? Because that'll change your life, man.
Possibly. Maybe. Anyway, Golden Hour by Kacey Musgraves is my favorite pop album of the year. I touched on this earlier, is just earnest. It doesn't feel like a pop star faking something. It feels like this is kind of the music that she's wanted to write for a long time. And now that she's getting to, she's taking the full advantage of it. She has a beautiful voice. The only time I kind of lose her on this album is when she dips super into country on tracks like Velvet Elvis. What a World, Golden Hour, Space Cowboy, all really incredible songs.
I don't dislike Velvet Elvis as much as you do. It's a very weird song lyrically, confusing at times, but I kind of like that vibe. This is my number two honorable mention. We'll reveal our honorable mentions that are on the others list as we go through. But yeah. The only reason I didn't have it in my top 11 is I didn't think it was very strong lyrically, but for the most part, every track on that album is very listenable, and I don't have a problem just putting that on and listening to it all the way through.
Yeah, I mean, she manages to use the lyrics Silverado and have me not roll my eyes. So I think that's the biggest musical accomplishment of the year.
I think one of the things I was worried about, so she has the song Space Cowboy, where instead of using Space Cowboy as like a noun, she uses You Can Have Your Space Cowboy. And then she has a song called Wonder Woman that follows that. And I was worried she was going to do the same thing where it was going to be, you don't have to wonder, woman. and I'm really, really, that would have completely kicked the album off of my list. But
I think low-key my favorite lyric of the year is when she just goes, I bet all that gold gets heavy on Wonder Woman. It's just like, yeah, I bet it does.
So weird thing that this reminded me of. So there are a lot of non sequiturs on this album, which is one of the reasons why I enjoy it kind of ironically, and one of the reasons why I didn't put it in my top 11.
Nah, I legit love this album.
And it reminds me a lot of the song Summertime Girls by LFO, where they just have these weird non sequiturs. I can't say a lot of bad things about this album because it managed to make a lot of people in that country genre happy while being a pretty good crossover hit into the pop genre.
I think it was more of a crossover hit than it was a country hit.
Yeah, I know a lot of people who didn't really enjoy this album who are big country fans, but I think for the most part people enjoyed it. And even people like us who don't, I mean, you listen to more pop music than I do, but maybe not like super poppy pop music. Mm-hmm. But we both enjoyed this album too. So, I mean, pretty big powerhouse move by Kacey Musgraves here.
Yeah, way to go. You killed it.
Where are we at? All right.
You're
my number
five.
Six.
Oh, you're number six. My number six. Sorry.
Hey, man. I got this. Black Panther, the album, I guess curated by Kendrick Lamar, featuring a lot of really talented artists that I love, and Absol. This was one of the early albums of 2018 that I got really into, and I listened to it a lot early on in the year, and I haven't really revisited a lot more than just a few tracks, but I think it was a really strong album. There are a few tracks on the album that I skip every time I listen to them, and
the Absol one.
Yeah, which is sad because James Blake is on that, and they gave Absol like two full verses on that track. Ugh. And but I mean, it's hard to say that anybody in hip hop is more influential right now than Kendrick Lamar. Everybody's trying to copy what he's been doing, whether it was people trying to jazz up hip hop with copying To Pimp a Butterfly. But I mean, he can now do stuff like this where he's curating an album, putting together beats and getting some really talented artists from all sorts of different genres and places in the world and put together an album that, when you see, I know you're more of a soundtrack guy, but usually like instrumental soundtracks for like indie films and stuff like that. This is when you see soundtrack for the most part, I just think, all right, I'm going to hate this compilation album. And this was not what it was. It's not a soundtrack. It's just kind of an album that fits the vibe of Black Panther. And it was a cool little cross promotion that worked really well.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you. I think the playlist soundtrack is not really my thing, but the score soundtrack is definitely more my thing. I mean, four of my favorite albums were the Annihilation soundtrack, the Phantom Thread soundtrack, the You Were Never Really Here soundtrack, and the which one am I missing? I'm missing one. Chris, help me.
I don't know.
God damn it.
I just know you really like Johnny Greenwood.
I do really like Johnny Greenwood. The Call Me By Your Name soundtrack.
Okay.
But yeah, I didn't dislike this album, but there was too much filler that than I would have hoped for.
Yeah, I just think the high points were really high. And I did like how Kendrick, even though he didn't appear on every track, kind of had a little part in everything to keep that thread going, making sure it didn't sound like, you said, a playlist soundtrack.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I think that worked really well. How about you go through your 5 through 3, because my 5 through 3 are The Void's Lump and Big Red Machine. So,
all right, cool.
We've talked about those.
One of your honorable mentions, something that we talked about at length because Talking Straight was so good. We didn't really mention how good the rest of Hope Downs by Rolling Blackout's Coastal Fever was. While I did put Talking Straight on my Summer Vibes playlist, I put basically the entirety of this album on my Summer Vibes playlist because just everything about this album makes me want to just like get in a car and drive by the beach and just be on the road with the windows down. I don't know if that's the vibe they were going for, but that's just kind of how I felt when I was listening to this album.
And they're from Australia. Yes, that's what the vibe they were going for.
Just not really a track on this album that I would say is bad.
No, I totally agree with you.
And it's just very strong all the way through. And while nothing quite hits the high of Talking Straight, there are other very good songs on there, and it's strong all the way through. Oh, yeah, I'm going to keep going. Number four, I mean, I guess I am not super mad at you for not introducing me to the Beths, because you did earlier in the year try to get me to listen to Gia Margaret maybe like 7 times, and I never listened to her. So with that in mind, I guess like discovering the Beths on my own through your playlist.
On your own?
Via you is one way to do it. The album Future Me Hates Me by the Beths, I've probably now only listened to it maybe like 4 times, but it was all this week. Mm-hmm. And still not sick of it. It's just so much fun. I think the way I would describe it is, hey, remember when Weezer was good? Do that, but New Zealand band and more fun. it's just really good rock music, and it's fun rock music. It's not angry rock music.
Yeah, we need more fun rock music in our lives.
My number three features my number one favorite song, Historian by Lucy Dacus. I did think this was a really strong album all the way through, and kind of in the same way that Hope Downs had that one high note and then the rest was strong, but it didn't really reach the heights. Night Shift, the first song on the album, is the best song, so I guess you could see the rest of the album as a letdown, but I think it holds up pretty well, and I've been listening to it a lot recently, and it's been a good all the way through album, and that's something that obviously I value.
You like listening to every song on an album?
Yeah, the satisfaction of not having to press that skip button even once on an album is so cathartic.
Yeah, it doesn't happen often, but when it does, it's pretty fantastic.
I mean, and those are the albums that I end up buying on vinyl, because obviously, I mean, you can skip an album, a song on the album, but like, it's just such a bitch. Why would you do it?
We need more vinyl so people stop putting out shitty songs in the middle of good records. So we both have the same number two. How about you want to start off? Or
yeah, as the resident Pusha T stan, Daytona by Pusha T. I think I hit my peak of loving this album right around when I went to see him play in LA.
I would love to see him play live.
He's kind of like this album. It was disappointingly short, but effective. Like, I didn't feel at any point while I was at the show, like, all right, I'm starting to get tired, maybe like wrap this one up. Nah, it was just like all rise. And Daytona is the same way. It's just 7 hard hitting tracks. Obviously no reason to skip any of them. I would have no problem with you putting any of them on a top 11. I put it on a lot of playlists this year, just as like a 7 songs in the middle of a playlist of random songs. and never mad when any of those songs comes on. You can listen to it as a full album, or you can listen to it individually as playlist songs.
Yeah, I mean, in the words of the great Sum 41, this is all killer, no filler. I mean,
weird story. I actually thought about that album today.
Is it because of Daytona?
I don't think it was because of Daytona. I think it was because of Lucy Dacus.
That is a long story that I don't need to hear.
Yep.
No, I mean, when I first listened to this album, I just wanted so much. I wanted it to keep going forever. I mean, he managed to make a song called Hard Piano with Rick Ross that was good. Like, do you know how impossible that is?
Nah, I saw the title of that track and I was like, this better be hard.
I mean,
he's gonna come with it with the piano.
I mean, every part of this album is fucking great. Like, What Would Meek Do is the best album or song title of the year.
Yeah.
I don't know.
If You Know, You Know, kicks it off, and that's probably my second or third favorite track on the album. Like, the really strong way to start an album. I got a shirt with the Pusha T's face on it, and on the back it says, If You Know, You Know.
You're so white.
Really, really happy I have that.
Like, so if we didn't have our restriction about one song per album, all seven of these would probably be in my top 100.
Out of six.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. Yeah,
maybe all seven in a top 100. In my top 33, I'd probably have six of them.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible how every song in this album is not just good. They're amazing. It's damn. It's such a good album. It doesn't have
25 minutes.
It doesn't have the, you know, the previous best rap albums. If you look back at Kendrick, you look at back at someone like Danny Brown and kind of his experimentation. It doesn't really have that, but this is just such a distilled version of who Pusha T is that it works so well. And I mean, the Kanye production is great. As much of a piece of shit human as he is, I mean, he produced the hell out of this. This is...
Oh, yeah. I was previously worried that he was going to save his best beats for his own album.
And yeah, he didn't do that.
For sure did not do that. He really, as Pusha T said, with yay back chopping. And it's good times.
Oh God, never say that again. So what's your number one?
My number one, Tell Me How You Really Feel. Courtney Barnett, and I will tell you how I really feel about this album. I liked it. You gonna hang up on me now?
So my number one album of the year.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of what I said about Daytona, you could say about Tell Me How You Really Feel, which is a weird thing to say about two very different artists. But similar. I mean, I think I only skip one track on this album, and if in a pinch I had to listen to the whole album, which I do sometimes because I have it on vinyl, I will listen to I'm Not Your Mother, I'm Not Your Bitch, because it's only like a minute long. Every other song on this album is just really, really great, and everything I said about Charity and the songs – top 11 applies to just about every other song. It's kind of just your own personal choice as to which song you like the most.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't quite as in love with this album as you were. I think it's very, very good. It just missed my honorable mentions. But I can clearly see how it's your number one album of the year. She's just such an incredible songwriter, and can, like, advanced bass can make simple direct lyrics a lot more impactful.
Yeah, if for some reason you haven't listened to Courtney Barnett, she has, I guess, three albums if you're counting the Kurt Vile album, which I mean I do, but her two albums on her own are two of the best albums of the last 5 years.
Yeah, she's fantastic. She's someone who I haven't seen live yet that I would love to.
It is a great experience. I loved her before that, and after seeing just how it's hard to really catch how good of a guitarist she is on the albums, because she is so understated. She throws in some really cool stuff live, and I mean, it's one thing to listen to an album and be like, all right, yeah, she's singing now and the guitar track is going on. It's another thing to see her playing these really complicated riffs while she's singing. And I mean, she's super passionate about her own music too, so that's cool to see.
Yeah. I mean, great. I'm excited to hear more from her in the future. I mean, it's only her second or third album, so I can't imagine it's going to get worse.
Yeah, she's not going away.
She ain't going nowhere. My favorite album of the year, I think I alluded to this earlier. It's Joy is an Act of Resistance by Idols. This is someone who I actually didn't discover until this year. I missed their album Brutalism, which came out a couple years ago, which is also absolutely incredible, which you should all listen to. This is the most uplifting, funny, fun, intense, in-your-face punk album I've listened to in a while. I mean, if you just read down the lyrics of Never Fight a Man with a Perm, it's just fantastic. The lead singer has a way with words of being super direct while also having a little bit of a deeper meaning behind it. One of the singles, Danny Nedelko, was about the harmony of immigration, and how it's important to have a mixed and happy culture, and that he'll happily accept anyone into the EU. I mean, it's very clearly anti-Brexit, very pro-unity. And he does that in a an important way with still being punk as hell. This album is, I don't know, 11, 12 tracks. Other than the song, I believe it's June, which is sadly about the death of his daughter. Every single track is, you know, 130 beats per minute, thrill ride, kind of in your face. It doesn't overstay its welcome. It just keeps going and just inject this straight into my fucking veins. I love this album.
I sadly have not listened to the entire album, so I'll take away one thing from this podcast, and it's that two things. One, Zach hates puns almost enough to hang up on me.
So close. Quite. It was so close.
Two, I need to watch Joy as an Act, or listen to Joy as an Act of Resistance. And I think that ties in nicely with our what we've been saying about how this has been a really big year for punk and punk-influenced music. And I think just kind of the era we're in, punk's always been a very anti-establishment genre, and the type of anti-establishment that punk needs to be now. Really nice that we're seeing stuff that's not disingenuous, and there've been a lot of acts that have failed because people thought that the world needed protest songs, and there was the awful Rage Against the Machine Public Enemy collab that just didn't work because it was so try hard. And it's nice to see that we're getting some good music that's important, but without trying so goddamn hard.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've said this word a couple times in this podcast, but this is a genuine album. Like, You can feel the band honestly believe everything they're saying. I mean,
the good song, job, really good job not using the word earnest there, because I think the people playing the drinking game would be fucked the fuck up if we kept saying that. So although Gabe, I guess, and I Emily did say it, so yeah.
I mean, just the song "Television" off this album is about keeping a you know, positive body image and and not being overcome by the pressures of society to look a certain way and to act a certain way. And you know, the chorus is them kind of chanting "love yourself" over and over. And they're a, you know, they're a self-proclaimed bunch of weirdos, and they want everyone else to be weird. You know,
well, it's, consider us weird as well.
Yeah. I mean, every fight song is about being weird. You know, the only people they dislike are the people that are actively against inclusion and unity. So I don't know. This album is from a band I had never heard before this year. And, you know, I became infatuated with them. So listen to Joy is an Act of Resistance. It's my favorite album of the year.
Will do. I probably would have listened to it earlier if you had actually put together your goddamn albums list.
Oh, yeah. I need to write that up. Someone should get on that.
Write it up, because we'll have it here and people will have to listen to the podcast to get it rather than going to your shitty WordPress page.
God, WordPress sent me like 17 emails trying to get me to pay for their premium subscription, and I've never wanted anything less in my entire life.
My favorite thing about WordPress is how goddamn awful it is, but also how much better it is than the second best blogging site.
Yeah, they're like, we don't really have to innovate because everyone else is somehow worse than us.
I did actually get to use the premium version of WordPress. Ooh. When I was working for that hockey website, and it is significantly better. Although sometimes the image import doesn't work very well, but
other than the images, which definitely aren't important for online publications, it was great.
No, for sure, no.
So I have one last question to lead you with.
Okay.
How happy
is it for me? Is it for the audience?
For you, and I guess okay. The audience. How happy were you that I didn't make you talk about Sun Kil Moon this year?
Oh, so goddamn happy. I couldn't hit the skip button fast enough when that came up on your top 100.
He released a solo album and a Sun Kil Moon album.
Yeah. Well, there were two tracks that came up, and I skipped them both.
He's great.
He's an awful human being, and I also don't like his music. So, works perfectly.
So good. So good. All right. On that note, it's been, 2.5 hours of this recording? You know, if you put off doing a podcast for long enough, I guess you have to record for a long time. We're going to be back in, I don't know, a little bit. A
couple weeks.
Yeah, with our favorite TV shows, favorite movies of the year. I am doing my catch-up on movies currently. I have a few that I need to get through that are kind of the critic darlings that I somehow missed. Because hey,
I had a list of 25. I had a list of 25 movies that I needed to watch as of, I think, 3 weeks ago. I've crossed off 3 from that list, so we're getting there.
How many were Welcome to Marwen?
None of them.
Don't see that movie.
I did see Sorry to Bother You.
I like that.
And I think I was a little too drunk for it.
All right. And on that note, we will actually come out with another episode this year. We promise. It's 2019. It's a new year. It's the same us. Thank you for listening.
Later.
But I have, an hour and a half of A Star Is Born to watch. Oh, I'm going to stop this recording.